afternoon. Please open to Ruth chapter 4, please. Ruth chapter 4. And as you're opening there, just one quick announcement. For those of y'all going through the Grace class, quick reminder, of course, we'll have that next Sunday night. I have an initial write-up of what we've studied so far this year, and there are copies of that on the lectern in the back, so please feel free to pick one up. Let me just say real quick, it's 15 pages, so I don't expect y'all to read the whole thing by next week. This is more or less just a more systematic overview of what we've covered to this point. And what we're going to do next week is continue testing these ideas in the book of Galatians. So we'll keep on to Galatians chapter 3 next week. But please feel free to pick up one of those in the back. If we run out of copies, I can of course make more, but that is available for you on the lectern in the back. All right, so tonight what I want to do is a character study. So a few months ago, a few of the young people were brainstorming just some different ideas for topics and things like that. And Autumn gave me the idea of doing character studies. Yeah, Autumn, you knew I was going to call you out. Doing character studies. And I realized it has really been a long time since I have done one of these. I've said many times that the Bible is written in character format. And I have found that more often than not, Christians know fictional characters rather than we know the real characters of the Bible. Whether it's television characters, movie characters, book characters, I mean, we all have characters fictionally that we love and that we draw inspiration from and that we relate to. And I have realized that far too often we as Christians don't read the real characters in the Bible that way, as characters, as people. Yes, they're historical people, but they're characters recorded for us in literary format to come to know. And tonight what I want to look at is one of the lesser known characters, Obed. Obed. Now, who is Obed? Probably you've heard the name, but could not tell me specifically who Obed is. And I want to kind of just delve into Obed tonight and really come to know who he was and what his significance for us is. I'm going to do a few of these through the rest of the year on and off, but tonight we're going to start with Obed. Ruth 4. Verse 18. Ruth 4, verse 18. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nashon. Nashon fathered Salmon. Or Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered David. So here in the genealogy at the end of Ruth 4, we read of Obed. Now, who is Obed? Well, if you look at the genealogy here, we already learned pretty quickly who he is. Obed is the son of Boaz, who then becomes the father of Jesse. Ergo, Obed is the grandfather of King David. Okay, keep your finger here in Ruth, but go over to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. Likewise, Obed is recorded for us in this opening chapter of the New Testament. Look at Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. As you again go down to verse 5, Matthew chapter 1, verse 5. Salmon fathered Boaz by Rahab. And Boaz, the father of Obed, by Ruth, and Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of David, the king. Now, there's already a detail here I want to pick up on. Valinda Peterson pointed this out to me 3 years ago, and I fell out of my seat because I could not believe I had missed this for so long. If you look at the genealogy here, Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Rahab was the father of Boaz. So Rahab in Joshua chapter 2 was the one who took in the spies into Jericho. Rahab was the mother of Boaz that you read about in the book of Ruth. So when you look at where you are in the genealogy here, we're introduced again to Obed. Obed. So I've given you a lot of names. What does all this mean? Go back to the book of Ruth chapter 4. Ruth chapter 4. So let me tell you what we're going to do with the remainder of our time. I've introduced Obed very briefly, just showing you he's pretty important because he's in the genealogy of David, and therefore he is in the genealogy of Jesus. But I really want to come to do two things. First, I want to talk about within the narrative, who is Obed, and just come to figure out who he is. And then what we're going to do is go to more of a macro picture of the Bible and really come to understand what then is the significance of Obed. So two things we're going to do. We're going to camp out in Ruth to understand his significance in the narrative, and then we're going to go to the larger biblical picture to understand who he is. So let's begin in Ruth 1. Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. Ruth 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah. The name of the other was Ruth. They lived there about 10 years. Both Mahlon and Chilion died, and the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. So many of you probably know the story of Ruth, but if you don't, let's just understand the story of Ruth. Here you find in the time of the judges, in the time of the judges. Now, y'all know my thoughts of the judges. This is a low point in Israel's history. After the reign of Joshua, Joshua dies, and it tells us in Judges 1 and 2 that then there arose a generation that did not know God. And by the time you get to the end of Judges, things go from bad to worse. What this is saying is during a time of badness in Israel's history, here we're introduced to Elimelech. Elimelech is no coincidence from Bethlehem, but there's a famine in Bethlehem. So he is going to travel with his two sons to the foreign country of Moab to pick up wives. But tragedy, Elimelech and his two sons die, leaving Naomi and Ruth and Orpah. So then what happens? Verse 6. Then Naomi arose with her daughters-in-law to return to the country of Moab, for the Lord had visited, for she had seen in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and had given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went their way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt kindly with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them and lifted up their voices and wept and said to her, "No, we will return and go back with you." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I sons in my womb that they may come to your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should have hope, even I should have a husband this night and should bear sons. Would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And Ruth said, Naomi said, "Your sister-in-law has gone back to the people, to her gods, in return after her sister-in-law." But Ruth said to her, "Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also to you, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So here's the short narrative of what happens. After Elimelech dies, Naomi decides to go back to Judah. But her two daughters-in-law, wanting to go back with her, are told, "No, depart from me, because I know it's going to be tragic for you." Orpah says, "Fine, I'll stay in Moab." Ruth says, "No, I'm going to go back with you." As you then pick up in the text into 1:19, Ruth and Naomi are going to make their way back to the land of Canaan, and they're going to arrive in Bethlehem. So 119, the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" Now, for us, I say Bethlehem. You all know the context. Of course, that's where Jesus was born. To a Jew reading this in the pre-Messianic age, this would be like saying the two of them went to Round Hill. I mean, they went where? They went where? They went to Bethlehem. This is a nowhere place. This is podunk little nothingness to them. So here, they've decided to return to the land, and they come to Bethlehem. And then it's going to be the time of the harvest. So, chapter 2, verse 1, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." And she set out and went to glean in the field and the reapers, and happened to come to part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to this young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant was in charge answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back from Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves of to the reapers.' So she came and continued from the early morning until now, except for a short rest." So this is the story of what happens in chapter 2. Ruth goes to the field of Boaz because, very important detail in the text, chapter 2, verse 1, Boaz was going to be the kinsman redeemer. What that means is, in Levitical law, God had given a way for women who had lost their husbands to have a family member who would provide for them and sustain them, etc. Boaz was this man. So Ruth goes into the field, Boaz sees her, and then he's going to begin to provide for her through harvest. As you get into chapter 3, this is to me one of the strangest stories of the Old Testament. Ruth goes and uncovers the feet of Boaz, and because of that, then they are going to become wed to one another. That's a story we can talk about another time. As you get into chapter 4, though, this is where we'll pick up again with Boaz. Now, Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. You understood they sat down? He said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of the people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one beside you to redeem it, and I will come after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz says, "The day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in the order to perpetuate the name of the dead in the inheritance." Then the Redeemer said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take the right of my redemption for yourself, and I cannot redeem it." So this unnamed Redeemer, family kinsman, says, "Yeah, no, I'm not doing it." Boaz says, "Well, realize that you will get Ruth." He says, "Fine, I'm not doing it." So verse 7, now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other. And this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," he drew off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought out to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead, that it may not be cut off among his brothers, and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day." Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into the house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this woman. Now, I'm going to come back to 4:12 in a minute, because I think this is an overlooked but critical verse of the book of Ruth. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to this man." When Naomi took this child and laid him on her lap and became her nurse, and the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So that's the short overview of who Obed is. Obed is really the child of surprise, promise, given to Ruth so that Naomi can be restored and redeemed throughout her history. So what's the significance of Obed? Obed is the one through whom Naomi and therefore Ruth are going to find redemption. That's who Obed is. He gives redemption through them. Well, but now let's talk in the larger biblical picture. What is the significance of Obed? What's the significance of Obed? There's two different strands of thought I think you really have to get to know the significance of Obed. The first is knowing who the Moabites are. The second is knowing who Perez is. If you'll go back to Ruth chapter 1, look at verse 1. There is a famine in Bethlehem of Judah, so Elimelech went to sojourn in the country of Moab. He went to Moab. Now, you'll remember last week, whenever we went through Genesis 14, and I talked about finding out what Shinar is and who the king is, I would likewise recommend what we need to do is figure out what is the significance of Moab. What's the significance of Moab? A few verses we need to consider, okay? Begin with me back in Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19. So this is in the Abrahamic narrative, and it tells us after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Genesis 19, verse 37. Look at verse 36, actually, for a context. Thus, both of the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also was Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites to this day. You'll notice that the Moabites and the Ammonites are a part of the really weird offspring of Lot. The Moabites arise out of the I don't want to use that word, Jerry, but yeah. I think you understand where I'm going. It's this weird relationship with Lot. That's where the Moabites come from. They have a horrible history to them. And you're going to imagine that a lot of bad things are going to happen with the Moabites. Look over to the book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 21. Here you have Israel going through the wilderness. This is a part of their cursed 40-year history. Look over to Numbers chapter 21. Numbers chapter 21. Verse 10. The people of Israel set out and encamped at Oboth. And they set out from Oboth and camped at Iabarim in the wilderness that is opposite of Moab toward the sunrise. So Israel is going to come to the land of Moab in their wilderness wanderings. Now look over to chapter 22, verse 1. Chapter 22, verse 1. The people of Israel set out and camped in the plains of Moab, beyond the Jordan, at Jericho. They go to the plains of Moab. Now, down to verse 10. Balaam said to God, Balak the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent me to you, saying. So here, Balak is king of Moab. Okay, keep going with me over to chapter 33. Look over to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers 33, verse 50. Numbers 33, 50. The Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, one more, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 5. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 5. This is saying God spoke to him beyond the Jordan in the land of Moab. What's the significance of Moab? Moab is going to be the immoral nation that we know had pagan, violent, self-exalted means against Israel. And it's kind of an irony here. Think through this with me for a second. God had said, the children of Abraham are the ones who will receive the land. The children of Abraham are going to be the ones who receive the land. God speaks to Moses, who has been told, you shall not go into the promised land in the land of Moab. What's the irony there? You do not get to go into the promised land based on the promised offspring. You have to listen to my promise in an immoral land with all of the history involved of Moab, of all things. So there's a lot of history here to Moab, but there's one other very important aspect to Moab we have to understand to get the message of Ruth. Go over now to Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy 23. Notice here the condemnation given. Deuteronomy 23. What Moses is doing at this point is saying, these are the individuals that cannot come into the assembly. Deuteronomy 23, verse 3. No Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord. Even to the 10th generation, none of them may enter the assembly of the Lord. Because they did not meet you with bread and with water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor from Pathor of Mesopotamia to curse you. But the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam. Instead, the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you because the Lord your God loved you. You shall not seek their peace or their prosperity all the days forever. Israel is told, go into the land of the Ammonites, the Canaanites, wipe them out. But he gives a special curse to the Moabites, to the Ammonites. Not even to the 10th generation shall they have any part in your assembly. Does it surprise us then when we go over to Judges chapter 3, what we're going to find the Moabites doing? Look over to Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 3, verse 12. The people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done what was evil in his sight. He gathered to himself the Ammonites and the Amalekites and went and defeated Israel. And they took possession of the city of palms, and the people of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. Now, you all may know what happens with Eglon in a very interesting story. We're doing interesting things tonight. Welcome to Moab. But do you see, Moab is given not just a bad name in the history of Israel, Moab is given a cursed reputation in Israel. They arose from a nasty relationship with Lot. They mistreat Israel, even with, not occlumency, even with occultism on their rise against them. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 23, there is a special curse given against them that they shall have nothing to do with you. Yet, when you get to the book of Ruth, who does God give messianic lineage through? A Moabite. A Moabite. Out of all people that God could use, God arises offspring through a Moabitess. It makes no living sense. Okay, so first train of thought. Second one's not going to be this long. I just want us to really get the big picture view of the Moabites. Nasty nation. They do horrible things. They're accursed. But God is bringing about a redeemer through the Moabites. Our God works in mysterious ways. Now, the second one we have to look at is Peres. Who is Peres? Okay, look back to Ruth chapter 4. Ruth chapter 4. Ruth chapter 4, this is an interesting verse. Ruth 4. So the elders of the people are giving a blessing to Boaz. And it says in verse 12, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, if you know this history, you should be laughing. May your house be like the house of Perez. Understand, brethren, this, I'll tell you the story in a second. But this would be like someone coming up to me and saying, may your daughter, Brooklyn, follow in the path of Rahab and of harlot the Babylon. What? Thank you. There's many good things that have been said about my children. No, thank you. Or someone coming up and saying, may your sons aspire to be like Samson. Oh, no. I mean, come on. May your house be like the house of Perez? Now, why is this so horrible? Go back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 38. If you think things have been weird so far, we're about to go from weird to worse. Genesis chapter 38. Genesis 38. Okay. Genesis 38, beginning verse 1. It happened that at the time that Judah... Now, this is talking about them, not the nation, but the man. This is the man, Judah. At that time that Judah went down from his brothers and turned aside to a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hira. There Judah saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. He took her and went into her, and she conceived and bore a son, and they called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. Yet again she bore a son and called his name Shelah. Judah was in Chazeb when she bore him. And Judah took a wife for Ur, for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. Now, as you go through the lineage and the story of what happens in Genesis 38, Judah is going to conceive by Tamar. Look over to Genesis chapter 38. Genesis 38, verse 27. Now when the time of her labor came, there were twins in her womb. And when she was in labor, one put out a hand, and the midwife took and tied a scarlet thread on his hand, saying, this one came out first. But as he drew back his hand, behold, his brother came out, and she said, what a breach you have made for yourself. Therefore, his name was Perez. Afterward, his brother came out with a scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was Zerah. Now, if you look at your footnotes, Perez means breach. So like some children are breach, baby B for us right now is breach. He's Perez. Okay, breach. Here's what happens. Much as the Moabites came from a weird relationship, Perez is going to come from a weird foreign relationship. And the elders of Israel have the audacity to tell Boaz, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So moral of the story, God uses immoral relationships for his purpose. Yeah, kind of, but not really. I do think there's a lesson to learn from Obed. And when you understand that the book of Ruth is calling upon both the history of the Moabites and the history of Perez, things become a lot more interesting. Because let me show you why. Follow with me just a few more verses. Obed fathers Jesse, who is a shepherd in Bethlehem, who then fathers David. King David then is, of course, the one through whom Messiah will come. 2 Samuel 7, that famous promise he makes. What is Obed teaching us? Now, unlike a lot of biblical characters, we don't know a lot about the personality or the character or the life of Obed. This is really all the mentionings we have to him. He's in two other genealogies, but that's it. Other than that, we don't learn a lot about the actions of Obed. But I do think there is a lot to learn from his lesson. What is that? Go with me to Isaiah chapter 11. Isaiah 11. So again, understand this with me. The mightiest king that Israel ever saw has a grandfather, Obed, whose great-grandmother, David, was a Moabitess, and who arose from a weird circumstance, to say the least. But Isaiah 11, verse 1. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. A branch from his roots shall bear fruit. Fruit of sanctification. You'll notice here what's interesting? Now, I've expounded on this verse at other times. This is a shout to Jesus. This is an unquestionable shout to Jesus. That the shoot, the branch that's talked about here is Jesus. But why is the Messiah referred to as the root of Jesse? Go down to verse 10. In that day, the root of Jesse, and y'all understand here the ethnicity of Jesse. Jesse is not pure Israelite. Jesse has Moabite blood in him because of his father Obed. In that day, the root of Jesse shall stand as a signal for the peoples. Of him shall the nations inquire, and his resting place shall be glorious. In that day, the Lord will extend his hand yet a second time to recover the remnant that remains from the people from Assyria, from Egypt, from Pathros, from Cush, from Elam, from Shinar even, from Hamath, and from the coastlands of the sea. He shall raise a signal for the nations, and he will assemble the banished of Israel and gather the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. What is Jesse standing as? Jesse is standing as a sign to the nations that what then will come? Romans chapter 15 clarifies. As you go over to Romans 15, Paul is going to give a comment on this Isaiah promise. And notice what he says. Romans 15, beginning in verse 8. For I tell you that Christ became a servant to the circumcised to show God's truthfulness in order to confirm the promises given to the patriarchs, and in order that the Gentiles might glorify God for his mercy. As it is written, therefore I will praise your name among the Gentiles and sing to your name. And again it is said, rejoice, O Gentiles, with his people. And again, praise the Lord, all you Gentiles, and let the peoples extol him. And again, Isaiah says, the root of Jesse will come, even he who arises to rule the Gentiles. In him will the Gentiles hope. May the God of hope fill you with joy and peace and in believing, so that the power of the Spirit may abound in hope. Why is Jesus referred to as the root of Jesse? Because the one who had Moabite blood would one day be the forefather of the Messiah, who would be raised upon a cross and be a sign to the nations that all nations now come to God through Jesus. All nations. Before this time, Israel and God's spiritual family was limited to a nation. But now God has arisen a Messiah who is King of the whole earth and whose promised gospel sounds to every creature of all language, tongues, and nations. Because the one who has risen has come from a Moabite. Obed, Father Jesse, who fathered David, who fathered Jesus. And from a Moabite, from the offspring of Perez, God has now brought the Messiah who stands as a signal to all nations. It's interesting as you go through Matthew 1, the women that are mentioned there. At times there's things that are discussed about the questionable nature of some of these women. It's also interesting to see the Gentile focus. That what God is doing is God has used Gentile nations who were even accursed in the Torah to bring about His promise. God has taken the most unsuspecting of people and the most unlikely of candidates to bring about the promised hope of the Messiah. So when you look at Obed, what do you learn? You look at Samson, you learn who not to be. You look at Abraham, you learn who to be. You look at Zechariah, you look at what to say. When you look at Obed, you don't learn much about practical life lesson, but you do learn God has brought us Gentiles into His family through a Moabite. And such is the promise that God gave to Jesse, the son of Obed, that has now been realized to Jesus, that all nations, languages, and tongues should come to Him. You can be getting out your songbooks at this time. So there's, I think, four verses in the Bible that talk about Obed. Or four chapters that talk about Obed. You don't learn a lot about him, but you sure learn a lot about his offspring, Jesus. God has brought about Jesus through a Moabite. It's just mind-boggling to see how our God has worked in the most unsuspecting of ways. I will tell you all the hope that people like Obed and Perez and even Judah give me. God does not want the morally perfect in their own measure to come to Him. God wants the humble and the penitent to come to Him. That when you look at someone like Perez, I mean, again, read all of Genesis 38 in your own time. It's a weird chapter. God wants people like Perez and those who come from the Moabites, the weird relationship of Lot, and people who come from Obed to come to Him. God wants all nations, languages, and tongues who are penitent and who are humble to come to saving faith in Jesus. That's the promise that God has given to us. Tonight, brethren, that same gospel message rings true. That fulfilling the Isaiah promise, God has sent His Son who was exalted on a cross. And upon that cross of Calvary, He took the sin of the world upon Himself. Destroyed sin, was raised in newness of life, that we too may walk in newness of life if we pattern Him in obedient faith and baptism. If this evening you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, come forward while we stand and sing.